Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they are a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Our guest is Jeffrey Rose. He's a hypnotist, and he is practicing here in New York City. He's actually one of the leading hypnotists in New York that health professionals refer their patients to. He specializes in various types of obstacles to implementation of healthy lifestyle. And you can hear his discussion about hypnosis in part one. We'll continue in part two to talk about some specific issues related to hypnosis and the types of clients he sees. In part one, after we paused for part one, you talked to me about something that you'd like to get across to listeners, which is about, you, in a sense, program people for health deliberately. And that's a very benign process. But you actually mentioned that we're all subject to a great deal of mass programming that undermines our health. So tell us about that.
Well, sure. Well, we're in a country with about 10,000 commercials a year for food products and processed foods, which are really hypnotizing the masses to do things we would never do intuitively. And all this marketing, if it's successful, it just destroys instinct and intuition from humans. We're like walking customers. Then people may become overweight, or they develop a chronic disease. And unfortunately, they're still looking to the wisdom of the marketplace for what to do. Then enters the diet industry in terms like low-cal and low-carb and low-fat and diet this, which are just silly marketing concepts, sucking us into buying more food products. And, of course, we have a pharmaceutical industry that is very powerful and is looking for as many customers as possible. And that's why I think over 50% of American adults are taking some pharmaceutical.
Well, do you ever see a TV ad or something and you go, my goodness, they're using some of the very same techniques that I recognize from my training in hypnosis? That there's subtle unconscious messages or ways of lulling people into a state of vulnerability where they glom on to a suggestion, but usually a suggestion that ultimately can undermine their health and create big buck opportunities for the whatever product is being purveyed.
Absolutely. You characterize a perfect example of hypnosis. You know, since the pharmaceutical industry has the most power, the most lobbyists, the biggest budgets for advertising, they're crafting well-designed mini hypnotic videos. And you're going to, between the music, between the cheerful, happy people, and then you see a pattern, usually it ends, ask your doctor, if blank blank drug is the right drug for you. And basically, subconsciously, all the person's hearing is, a doctor associated with a message, and this drug is the right for you, is the right thing for you. So right. Another way of saying this drug is the right drug for you, you're saying ask the doctor if this is the right drug for you.
Yeah, it sounds pretty reasonable. Yeah, it's like, why not?
Yeah, and now there's only, I think, two countries in the world, correct me, Ron, if you know, America and New Zealand, that were allowed to even advertise to the public.
It's called DTC, direct-to-consumer advertising, which is absurd, really, because our goal, really, in a health system should be to reduce people's dependency on medication, especially when our healthcare costs are going through the roof and there's so many side effects with meds. And yet here we're trying to stoke people's appetite for pharmaceutical solutions, sometimes surgical solutions to problems, because we even see advertisements for, get this joint replacement.
Right. And I'm appalled by when I see the intake forms that a client might be presenting with anxiety, and they might have been seeing a psychiatrist for years, and they're taking some medication. I'm not going to mention a brand. They're taking medication, and I see they're drinking 2 or 3 cups of coffee a day, their sleep is pretty poor, they're not exercising. And I'll say, did a doctor ever ask you about these things? And like, no, or maybe they said, yeah, you should exercise more. As if taking 220 to 280 milligrams of a stimulant every day is not going to be a good thing for you. I mean, you don't want to be doing that. You need the exercise release. And of course, you got to get good sleep. I think sleep's one of the foundations. We have three pillars of health. We need nutrition, exercise, and good sleep. So basically what I'm doing is I'm dehypnotizing my clients and or programming them to do what they ought to do. I'm empowering them. So I'm saying it doesn't matter what this environment is like in your lifetime. I'm going to empower you to be in control and to care and to be unaffected by this, that you're going to have your own eating and drinking and exercising habits. It doesn't matter what anyone else does. You know, and I have to coach them too on a conscious level sometimes because, you know, when you're, it's hypnotic when you're in a peer group where people are drinking lots of alcohol, and it's very easy to have more than you, what you would do by yourself or on a date, you know, especially if your boss is drinking lots of alcohol. And everyone can always point to another individual and say, well, at least I don't drink like that person. There's always somebody who drinks even more than you. But we know how that affects our resilience, mm-hmm. our liver, our mood.
Yeah, and that's an example. I mean, that's how lemmings go over the cliff. Lemmings go over the cliff because they you know, the entire population of lemmings is running off the cliff. So like lemmings just go, hey, you know, all the other lemmings are going in this direction. It must be the right direction, and there they go off the cliff during their whatever it is semi-annual ritual of self-destruction. So a big issue that I see, and I think an issue that's very pervasive, is the issue of anxiety, even phobias. Certainly, your work is germane to that. How do you work with a patient who's you know, has a lot of anxiety?
Well, I'm going to cover the basics, like I just said, with you know, low, little or no caffeine, getting 7.5 hours sleep.
Those are lifestyle recommendations. You don't have to have hypnosis to tell people that. Yeah. I mean, I guess you use the hypnosis to reinforce that.
Exactly. In fact, in hypnosis, I'm usually instilling and motivating and inspiring them to do the right things, knowing that it's going to help them. You know, and I'll use as a metaphor, you know, picture hunter-gatherers for 2.5 million years of evolution. We had imminent danger to deal with, and peril, and animals lurking. And we're already wired innately with that fear response, that fight-or-flight response. So when presented with real peril and danger, the heart would be fast, the muscles, you know, would be tight, we'd have shallow breathing and sweaty palms. But that would be a good fear-based warning mechanism to take action. And everything would go back to normal, and they're able to cope better, okay? Now, today, if we're feeling stressed or anxious, it's not the actual event, it's the interpretation and the story and the perception of the event, and then it manifests itself with the overreaction of that stress response. So in hypnosis, when they're deeply relaxed, very comfortable, I'm helping them to interpret things in a more positive way, to let things go so that they can live in the present and be in the moment, understand you can't do anything about that. You know, anxiety is just a fear about something in the future that ain't going to happen anyway. Now, also, speaks again to a holistic way of doing things, those hunter-gatherers, they did 3 hours of exercise a day.
Okay.
They felt pretty good,
yep.
You know? You can imagine, and
they dissipated their adrenaline. If the adrenaline was there for fight or flight, they fought and they flew. You know, they actually acted out on their internal impulses in a physical manner.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. It's good to do it. I mean, it's unfortunate that sometimes the only time that somebody is going to have their heart beating fast is when they're fearful.
Yeah.
You know, they don't get that movement. You want to get that flow. You want to exercise every single day and let your heart beat fast. And then put your hand over your heart and notice that it's fast, but now it's going slow and it's back to normal and everything's okay.
Right. And you can auto-regulate. You can bring it up voluntarily and then you can allow yourself to relax and it'll get under control. I think people who suffer from anxiety, it's almost their body's off to the races when they least want it to be.
Right. And then actually when their heart's beating faster, now they're even more fearful. And it gets more intense because now they're focusing on, oh my God, my heart's beating fast, it's gonna pop out of my chest.
Right.
You know? And that's unfortunate. They need to have that release. and they'll cope better. So if you're exercising every single day, you're getting your heart beating fast, that's subconscious, just like you're salivating and your eyes are blinking. You're not aware of it. That's okay. So that's one of the things I'm going to instill with them, is the idea of exercising every single day, even if it's half an hour, you know, just as long as you're moving.
Are there some patients that you see who just are not inducible? I mean, I studied hypnosis in medical school, and they selected 10 of us for a class. And mm-hmm. then we went through a series of inductions, they call it, I guess, efforts mm-hmm. to get mm-hmm. us into a hypnotic mm-hmm. state. And it turned out that, and the guy said, I predict that two of you will be very, very unhypnotizable, very refractory, very resistant. And one or two will be extremely inducible. They'll be just model patients who will go very readily into a deep trance. And the rest of you will be somewhere intermediate. I found that I was in the intermediate category. Mm-hmm. But I remember distinctly one of our classmates, who was a very, you know, reasonable, you know, rational, scholarly guy, and he didn't even know that he had this capability. He went into the deepest. He was really gone into the mm-hmm. most deep hypnotic state. He did everything that the therapist suggested to him, and involuntarily,
right
through hypnotic. He wasn't faking it. He was really doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Do you notice that there's a spectrum?
Well, there's two things. There's, you know, depth of trance, and there's also suggestibility. So pretty much anybody could be guided into trance. Again, it's self-gnosis. We could all do this ourselves.
Yeah, but gnosis coming from the Greek word, which means knowledge.
Well, hypno is sleep.
Oh, okay.
Hypno. But we could all be guided to that state naturally. Now, if someone's going to be working with a therapist in a clinical situation, it's really incumbent upon the therapist to build really good rapport so they feel comfortable. It's a teamwork, okay? I'm just acting as a catalyst with my client to help them. So assuming we get that down, and they're not heavily caffeinated, and they're well-rested, so they're open, they're able to focus, you know, they, at least they wouldn't be in a state where they want to go to a movie, let's say, on that day because they're not able to focus, they're going to be fine in trance. Now, once they're in trance, there's degrees of suggestibility. So we use the term somnambulist, which, you know, clinically means those people that are walking in their sleep.
Mm-hmm.
7 to 10% of the adult population are somnambulist.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a subject like that, you could elicit a lot of profound post-hypnotic phenomena, like mm-hmm. a positive hallucination or a negative hallucination or, mm-hmm. or amnesia or analgesia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to have somebody that's highly suggestible to do that. And that's usually about 1 out of 4 people are considered highly suggestible. Now, if you went to a stage show, you might see, you know, 100 people in the audience. Let's say 15 people volunteer. They're going to be better than 1 out of 4 excellent subjects, just by the virtue of the fact that they're volunteering. They probably have more powerful imaginations or less inhibited. They want to go with it. So on stage, you have 15 people, maybe 6 or 7 are outstanding subjects to do a lot of silly things. The other people that are on stage that are not complying and not participating would still benefit in a clinical situation,
mm-hmm.
but they're not going to do some silly things like dance like Madonna.
Right.
And then the audience erroneously believes that only some of those people are hypnotized, when the right. fact they're all in trance, but they're just not going to comply.
Right.
So I don't need a highly suggestible person, although if they had chronic pain, I'd have to test to see how suggestible they are. Because if they're very suggestible, you can make the suggestion that, you know, I could, you know, touch a certain part of their shoulder and just say anything I touch here will feel completely numb. You'll feel no discomfort. They could emerge from trance. You could squeeze them there on that shoulder, and they wouldn't feel pain. They'd feel a sensation, but they wouldn't interpret it as pain. So that's a wonderful thing when you're going to deal with people with chronic pain, when they have nothing else they could do except to take a pharmaceutical.
Right. So I guess it's a matter of degree. I think anyone can benefit from this type of interaction.
Yes.
But some people may have a more profound response in terms of some conditions that are often thought to be very, very hard to reach with simple convincing.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So basic modification, basic behavior modification is achievable with most everybody. It's just a matter of degrees. You know, sometimes it's going to be hard for people to comply with everything. And I actually believe that it's actually good to do a lot of changes. It doesn't have to be major changes at each time, but a lot of changes, because each change will support something else. So if you were to say to somebody, you know what, you know, you got to really be exercising every single day, but they're not getting good sleep, well, they're not going to muster the motivation as easily. And then when they exercise, they're going to feel more pain the next day because they're not recovering well. They're not healing their muscles. And we all know that, you know, no pain, no gain, that's fine. But it shouldn't be too painful. You know, we want to associate more pleasure with exercise. So if they were to wake up well-rested by getting to sleep earlier at night, then they're more resourceful, more resilient. It's easier to exercise. If they exercise daily, they'll sleep better. Okay? They're also less inclined to self-medicate with caffeine, which means they're less inclined to eat sugar. Okay? Also, they're less inclined, you know, of course, when you're sleep deprived, also the metabolism slows down, the appetite increases, the body goes into an emergency mode, conserving energy, and then like a drained battery, you want to reach for starches and high glycemic things in the late afternoon or evening to pick yourself up. So it's easier to make four changes and do everything right, like even cutting back on the alcohol, which supports sleep. And then if you're well-rested, you don't need the caffeine, then you don't need to take the edge off with alcohol. Therefore, your sleep gets better, and you're on a great cycle that supports all those changes.
It sounds like you work a lot with sleep. And I noticed from your bio that you're also spearheading a program that you're the Rockland County chapter leader of something called the Start School Later program, which is a national coalition of health professionals, sleep scientists, educators, parents, and students dedicated to increasing public awareness about the relationship between sleep and school hours, because your platform is to advocate for school start times that are compatible with teenage biorhythms. Yeah, I mean, this is, that's an interesting notion in and of itself. Could you briefly describe that?
Okay. Well, I've always valued getting more sleep. And I know back when I was in high school, when all high school students started early, I had a paper out, which is a good thing. You're responsible and you're dealing with adults at an early age. I would go to bed when everyone else went to bed. I would wake up 45 minutes earlier. And throughout junior high school and early high school, I was getting a lot of B's, not A's. And the teachers would always say to me, and they'd see me yawning, you know, Jeffrey, are we keeping you up? They would kind of chide me. And I did not know that I'm just tired. Like, not everyone needs to be yawning in class. So knowing that, and then in my practice for 20 years, I would have so many parents bringing their teenagers in September because they're irritable, they're angry, they're depressed, you know, and it's not a coincidence that this is September and school just started, and throughout the summer they felt wonderful, okay? It's not because, you know, September is a worse month than August. So what we know with teenagers is that the natural sleep-wake cycle shifts where they don't get tired close to 11. That's when melatonin starts flowing. So in order for them to get the 9 hour sleep they need, they have to wake up at 8 o'clock. The average school start time in America is 8 o'clock, or technically 7:59. So they're not getting enough sleep. You know, the schools up in Rockland County where my daughters will be going years from now, starts at, right now at 7:24 AM, way too early. So you can imagine what that's doing to their health and well being when they're waking up. Whether the alarm clock is their loving parent still giving them adrenaline, they're waking up with excess cortisol, their short-term and long-term memory are impaired, they can't focus, 25% are falling asleep in the first or second period, their immune system weakens, their metabolism is slower, their appetites increase, their mood is worse, they're aging faster. They're also more inclined to be caffeinating, eating sugar, and even using drugs. And not to mention, you know,
especially stimulants,
and
so many kids have attention deficit disorder these days. They're taking Ritalin, Adderall, you name it.
Exactly. So a lot of that, you know, I think 30% right now of teenagers are getting enough sleep. 30%. Asking a child, a teenager, to be at school in the 7 o'clock hour is like asking an adult to be at work in the 4 o'clock hour.
Right, and this is you're saying that this is a peculiarity of teenage brain biology, that their circadian rhythms are different up exactly. until a certain age. It,
right. Now, oftentimes, you know, the system is blaming the children, the teenagers, for staying up too late. And yes, of course, they are staying up too late, many of them, if they're staying up past 11. But you can't expect them to just easily fall asleep at 11, which is not a good thing. So it's not like an or, it's an and. They should go to sleep earlier, but they should also be allowed to get 9 hours sleep and not have to show up on the average with 7 hours sleep. That's like an adult who needs 7.5 hours getting 5.5 hours. How are you going to function? And I look at it as child abuse. So I'm doing something about it within my county. We've got a great national campaign. We have 39 chapters throughout the country right now, all advocating, and we're making changes, school district by school district. They're showing the grades are going up. There's less sick days, less ADHD. Okay, there's so many benefits to allowing our children to get the sleep they need.
So today's Intelligent Medicine call to action around that is there a website for that?
Sure. There's startschoollater.net. You can also find it on Facebook. And join, look for a chapter in your state and in your county, and you could do something. There's no reason to have to accept the status quo about this. And you could, you got to work on it district by district, but I'm working on the state level right now with some of our assembly persons and state senators. We're probably going to get legislation introduced, not unlike Maryland and New Jersey, to have the State Department of Health study the issue, which we already know what that's going to reveal, and then advocate and make recommendations that the school districts don't start their high school time before 8:30, which I still think is a little bit early, but it's acceptable because at least we have a chance of having a majority of our children showing up well-rested in school instead of like zombies.
Right. We need to make some incremental changes. Maybe we can't revolutionize our educational system, but at least move in the right direction. And so I thank you because I know that you're busy seeing clients in your practice here in New York. What's the information about your center?
Okay, well, they could go to www.ahcenter.com. That's for one. I have a Facebook page, which is Facebook and look up Advanced Hypnosis Center. YouTube, I've got a YouTube channel. You can just look up, I think, HypnoPro NYC or just Jeffrey Rose on YouTube. And visit the website. I have some of my published articles up there as well if you want to read. If you were looking for any self-help audios, I could probably send you some as well and some affirmations that you could use. Short of seeing me in my practice, there's a lot of things you could do to help change your attitudes and beliefs and your behavior to support a healthier life.
That's ahcenter.com, correct?
Yeah, ahcenter, like Advanced Hypnosis Center, ahcenter.com.
And your practice is located in Midtown Manhattan?
On the Upper East Side of Manhattan, off Park Avenue at 75th Street.
Great. Well, I want to thank you very much for enlightening us about, I think, a very, very important and often ignored potential tool for people trying to make lifestyle changes. Sometimes conscious resolve can be undermined by unconscious impulses, and we can get those two in sync. With some of the tools that you've discussed with us, hypnosis, cognitive behavioral therapy, and the right insights from a practitioner who really embodies this type of lifestyle personally. Thanks very much for joining us, Jeffrey. It's a pleasure having
you
on Intelligent Medicine.
Thanks so much.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.